And now, from the Green 960 studios in San Francisco, this is an organic conversation with Helga Hellberg and Mark Mulcahy.
And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, relationships, and life itself. We're your hosts, Helga Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And thank you for all the questions and comments that we've received. I picked one from Katie in Santa Cruz, and I hope everyone is sitting right now. She writes, Mark Mulcahy, why do Inca berries make me have the best day ever? Mark, there must be more. First of all, I feel completely excluded. Hello, I'm your host, Helga Hellberg.
Well, why don't you ask her why do you think Inca berries?
Oh, I will. I sent an email back and said, Katie from Santa Cruz, what the hell is going on? But did you feed them to, like, what? What's the story here, Mark Mulcahy? Why do Inca berries make me have the best day ever? What's an Inca berry
well,
to begin with?
Okay, first,
and good for her. Good for you guys.
First of all, an Inca berry is also known as a Cape gooseberry. Have you ever had a gooseberry?
Oh, totally known also as a Cape gooseberry.
Well, do you know what a gooseberry is? It's that it's a small berry, probably like a half of inch round, and it has kind of a sweet.
Oh, it's
unique,
a round berry.
A round berry, yes, sweet, tangy flavor to it. And they're golden. A lot of times you'll see them in packages in natural food stores where they're dried, and people use them in baked goods and things like that or in smoothies. And the reason that they may help Katie have the best day ever.
Do we want to know?
Yes, okay. It's because they are high, really high in A, C, B1, B2, B6, and you have a nutritional background. B12. You know, it's, I think, one of the only fruits that have B12 in it. That's not common in plants at all.
No.
And they're high in protein. They have 16% protein.
B12 usually you only get through a meat protein conversion.
Mm-hmm.
But, wow. So it's a powerhouse. It's a little golden gooseberry known, a.k.a. powerhouse.
Yeah, Inca berries. And sweet, tangy. And if you wanted to actually get
I guess they're just really yummy and
they're really great. They're very unique. Actually, Katie introduced me to them. So I have to say thank you to Katie for that.
And you can buy them off our website. No, you can't. I'm kidding.
Well, if you really, now that we've piqued your interest, actually the season, if you want to get them locally, there's not a lot of local ones grown, but there's a grower down in Santa Cruz. And Matt Landy, for the produce coordinator for New Leaf Community Markets, has told me that he's going to start carrying them in the fall. So they're usually like October to January-ish. Maybe there might be still a few stragglers
fresh
around that when they're fresh, but there you can get them dried.
But do they make you as happy when they're dried, or do you have to eat them fresh?
You know, I'm going to have to say I haven't tried a dried one yet. I've only had them fresh.
Katie, if you can let us know, Katie from Santa Cruz, please let us know if dried Inca berries make you have the best day ever too.
Well, and I just have one more thing, Katie. I just need to say, get in there. And you know what that means.
Okay. Whoa. And for any weird produce and any delicious organic produce anyway, you can also check out Earl's Organic Produce, one of our...
He probably won't have Inca berries.
Oh, he won't?
No, they're just not that. You'd find them at farmers markets. You'd find them at, you know, specific locations.
Yeah. Worth checking out, but
definitely worth it. If you're in the Midwest or the East Coast, a lot of people do have gooseberries, though. So it'll be a similar berry.
Yes. Wonderful. I want to hear more about that story when we're off air. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we are excited about our guest today. We're talking about what's going on under the surface, in this case of the ocean, and also under the surface of fresh water, and as how it affects us above the surface. More on that when we come back right after the break.
Recipe. This is a love attack. I know.
So don't delay, act now. Supplies are running out. Allow if you're still alive. 6 to 8 years to arrive. And if you follow the maid, beyond tomorrow. But if the offers shine, you might as well be.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today's show is all about fish. Literally the name as well as the species. Our guest today here in the studio live with us is Kenny Beloff, the co-owner of Fish Restaurant in Sausalito, California, Northern California, just a hop over the Golden Gate Bridge from San Francisco. Welcome to the show, Kenny.
Helge, Mark, thank you so much for having me. It's a real honor to be here.
And it's such a critical topic. We talk about agriculture and stories from the land, and we should call that stories from the sea too, because what you are doing with your restaurant and as a person is going by far beyond anything in regard to sustainability around seafood that I've ever seen. But let's start with your passion and your background. You were actually born in Moscow, Russia. And what's the story? How did you come from Russia to find a love of fish here in the United States to open a restaurant in Sausalito?
Well, that's going way back. So yeah, I was originally born in Moscow. My family, we immigrated to the States in 1981. My parents are from the performing world. My father was the director of the Moscow Circus, and my mom was a comedian and an actress, and they both still are doing the same thing here in the States. We found ourselves in New York, and then both of them got teaching positions in North Carolina at a university there. So that was my kind of growing up years. Really fell in love with freshwater fishing, then moved to Florida to help run a skateboard park, which was my passion when I was a little bit younger, and fell in love with ocean fishing. Found my way to the San Francisco Bay Area in the mid-90s to pursue a business in the new Soviet Union. Got in a little over my head with things there.
Actually, you went back.
I went back. Spent a month there trying to start this business. Got in a little over my head with the new way Russia worked, and kind of came back with my tail between my legs and said, you know, that was mark that off the list of things to do. And
important experience, I'm sure.
Absolutely, and got into the world of photography and continued fishing out here and started to see some really, really nasty things out on the ocean in the world of sport fishing as well as commercial fishing. So I decided to get a job on a boat as what's known as a deckhand, working as, you know, tying hooks on for people, netting fish for people, and filleting fish for people. People were so caught up in catching the biggest fish, the biggest trophy, that they would throw fish overboard that wasn't that, you know, photo-worthy,
perfect, gigantic, yeah.
And we were fishing
but perfectly fine to eat, for example.
Perfectly fine
respect
to eat.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And we were fishing such deep water at the time when an area known as Cordell Banks was open. And we would be fishing 300-400 feet of water, and we were fishing for California rock cod. And when these fish would come up to the surface, they would be dead because we would bring them up so quickly.
The pressure.
Absolutely. Yes. And so I would see these just mounds of floating fish dead on the surface because they were too small for, you know, the trophy, but they were, like you said, Helge, plenty big to eat. 2004, I was approached by Bill Foss, who started
How
Fish.
How did you deal with that? Like seeing that and knowing you had a care already for the ocean and you knew back then that was not right, right?
I tried to deal with it by trying to educate the customers on the boat, telling them to keep it. It's already, you know, we killed it, now let's eat it. Well, that didn't go over so well with the captain.
who is this guy?
Yeah. Pretty much, you know, who is this guy telling my customers what to do? So that career didn't last so long. But then I was approached in 2004 by Bill Foss, who started Fish, and Bill brought me in, and we were there on opening day, and we decided to be the first truly sustainable seafood restaurant in the Bay Area. And we were working with people like Monterey Bay Aquarium. That was kind of our foundation. And as the years have gone on, we've learned so much. And we became commercial fishermen. We bought a boat. We went out there and worked. We traveled. We saw different fishing gears. And we started to make the decisions ourselves, what was sustainable and what wasn't. We prefer to use the word renewable because renewable demands proof of sustainable. Sustainable for me just means how long. something that's sustainable today might not be sustainable tomorrow if we keep attacking it and just taking whatever we want. But if we do it in a renewable way, then we have hope for the future. My kids have hope for the future.
Well, you know, so Helga, listening to Kenny talk about that reminds me of that Green Dot program we brought up a couple weeks ago in Germany, where you have to think about the whole process from beginning to end and also its effect on the world.
And that's really the new kind of hip word, right? Life cycle analysis. It's their practices today have to incorporate not just that they can go on forever, but be incorporated, not in themselves, but be incorporated into an environment that has been depleted in many ways or in a practice that is, you know, harmful in other ways. So yes, the grüne Punkt in Germany, the green dot, means that the manufacturer has to ensure that the product and its packaging can be followed and traced and recycled or reused from really production moment all the way to until it's disposed.
Mm-hmm.
And that has caused that it's normal and common, and everyone actually does it. When you buy something that has quite a bit of packaging, you take it out and you leave the packaging in the store. So that created that the store owners, and we're talking, you know, 80 million people country, made a demand onto the producers to say, you have to make the packaging as little as possible because it's a real deal for us to handle this, to mm-hmm. manage this. And, you know, it created a product and a packaging economy that is as green as you can possibly find it.
Mm-hmm.
Really beautiful.
You know, Kenny, I have I don't want to digress too much, but when you were talking about all this fish that was floating around, and I'm sure it's just not sport fishing that this happens, is there any way, in Marin Organic, Helga tells the story and has they've created this great program, this gleaning program, where this is perfectly good food. It's not necessarily going to, you know, end up here or there, but could be eaten. And am I being really, really naive to think that maybe that there could be a gleaning program that could go on with fishing?
I think with commercial fishing, there's a chance. With sport fishing, as well as commercial fishing, regulations are so strict. Problem with fishing is the ocean's really big and you can't police it. It's very difficult to find out what's going on out there and what's not. When you have an observer on board, sure, that's one thing. But observers can't be on board every day on every vessel. It just doesn't work that way.
Well, can we make it economically viable for the sport fishing captain to take in the fish that the angler doesn't want to keep, his customer, but he drops it off at your place or wherever, at schools, public schools, anyone who wants a clean, beautifully line-caught, hook-and-line-caught protein source, and gets actually financial, you know, benefit from it. I mean, even if it's just a fraction of what the fish would be in the store, it's still better for the captain than nothing. It's such a waste besides, you know, the disrespect of the animal and life and all that. But wow, at least let's make use of it.
I think you definitely could. What the kind of the first red flag that I see is if it was to be abused. How would we limit what then the boat got to take for the day? For the customers on a sport fishing boat, let's say, and then how much is just being kept. In 1999, I want to say, there was a boat that went out of the Bay Area, a sport fishing boat, with 9 guys. They caught 310 albacore tuna. Nobody can use 310 albacore tuna in enough time for that fish to be quality. Those fish were killed for no reason. They were killed out of the desire because the bite was really hot and every bait that hit the water got bit and they just kept doing it. And all of a sudden you look on the deck and there's 310 tuna. I believe we need to self-regulate. Commercial fishermen need to set regulations themselves. We don't always need to listen to what the state and the government says. This is your quota, so go fill it. Same thing with sport fishing boats. I think sport fishing boats would have such an opportunity if we put an educational piece on the actual fishing part. The catching of the fish is a bonus. Yes, you're out on beautiful San Francisco Bay, or you're outside the Golden Gate, up the Marin coastline, or down the San Mateo coastline, and you're catching fish, but you've got somebody telling you about the history of the watershed, telling you about the history of the Golden Gate, the history of the fishery, and oh, there goes your rod. It's you got a fish on there. And you get that experience of mm-hmm. catching a fish, taking something home to cook for your family, but it's not all about, you know, the largest sack of fish.
The hunting of it. Yeah,
it's we need to start appreciating what we have. And until we do, we're going to be in really big trouble.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us in the studio, Kenny Beloff, the co-owner of Fish Restaurant. I think it's fair to say the leading sustainable fish restaurant in the nation, in Sausalito, just north of the Golden Gate Bridge in Marin County, California, or one of the most sustainable. Who do you pick who you're working with, and what's your relationships like? You have your own boat, but you also work with local fishermen.
So for me, 7 years ago when we started, we were as green as could be in the sense of just being new to this. And we kind of...
a different definition
of green.
No, we're totally green. We have no idea what we're doing.
Exactly. And we basically would call companies every day and they would deliver to our back door. And that was acceptable 7 years ago.
Do you pick then?
Then it was
we don't need names, but...
No, we worked with, I think, 7 different wholesalers in 2004 when we opened.
Known
established companies that, you know, you call in your order at night and then they deliver in the morning, and received some great-looking product. Then I started to realize that...
But you had a commitment to sustainability when you opened, right?
Absolutely.
Right from the get-go.
Day one. And that's not to say that we haven't made mistakes in 7 years.
Absolutely.
There's things that we served 7 years ago that I wouldn't think about serving now. And that's, again, after being on boats, seeing the gear method, learning about the fishery, that's gotten me to the point where I am today. We were working with all these companies. They would deliver every day. Then I started to realize that when I would call in my orders to these wholesalers, and I would ask the question, is that sustainable? Is that line caught? And they heard the question. They knew what the answer had to be to make the sale. Absolutely, it's sustainable. Absolutely, it's line caught. And again, naive, I bought it, and I continued on. Then one day, I got a call from a wholesaler here in San Francisco. Kenny, we got some beautiful Alaskan king salmon. And he names me a price. I say, great, I'll take 100 pounds. Is that troll caught, I ask? Troll caught meaning one hook, one line, one fish at a time, sustainably done. He hears the question. Absolutely, it's troll caught. Truck pulls in the back door of fish. Open the door, I meet the driver out there, I open the boxes, and there's net marks all over the fish. And a net mark happens when a fish passes through the opening of a gill net and then tries to struggle its way out. The net goes into the skin, and you can actually see the net marks in the fish's skin. You would only see this on a whole fish. You wouldn't see this on a fillet with the skin off.
Right.
So I call the wholesaler, and I say, hey, listen, it's Kenny. Why did you lie to me? And he says, it's not net caught. And I said, listen, I called him by name, of course. And I said, listen, you've been doing this for a lot longer than I have. Tell me the truth and you've got a customer for life. Continue to lie to me and I will be gone in a heartbeat. And that was kind of a really big turning point for me that I just kind of went, you know what? I'm going to have to do a lot of this myself. Bill and I bought a boat. We started fishing.
And demand really the quality you want, in
honesty
in your partners. We want to hear more about that. Kenny Beloff, the co-owner of Fish Restaurant, one of the leading sustainable fish restaurants in the nation. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we'll be right back after the break.
My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc.
Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Hi, I'm Peter Walsh. My wife and I founded Manika Jewelry with the intention to offer a different kind of jewelry. Beautiful, made by local Bay Area artists, and without a social or environmental compromise. Our featured designers use reclaimed precious metals and Kimberly certified gemstones. It's jewelry made with heart and soul. Come visit our store just off Union Square at 11 Maiden Lane in San Francisco, or visit our website at manikajewelry.com.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today's show is all about fish. With us in the studio, Kenny Beloff, co-owner of Fish Restaurant in Sausalito, Marin County, California. Kenny, you were saying how you got into this movement much more than industry or business by working on a vessel for sport fishermen and then starting your restaurant and working with regular, long-established fish wholesalers who weren't exactly communicating how this fish was caught or how sustainable it really was, and then to the point where you decided, okay, this is not working. If we really want to uphold our commitment to sustainable business practices, we have to ensure or verify the source of the fish to completely different new degree, and you really defined kind of a new way of relationship for restaurants, which now to a fair extent has kind of become the nature for many restaurants, farm to table, really from a land base, but fish is really still out there. How do you do it and what do you do?
Excuse me. As I was saying, that we started to weed the companies out and finally ended up in a happy place with one wholesaler.
With no one.
With no fish. And
yeah, so, great.
We changed the name of the restaurant.
So then you started to offer organic burgers.
Well, we should open meat. Yeah. So we ended up with one wholesaler in Port Seafood, and we basically found a relationship where they knew they sold everything. You wanted, you know, whatever fish was out there, they sold it. But we created a relationship where they knew what my mission was. And they knew that if it met my standards, it showed up in my back door. And I can't tell you how many times I showed up to the restaurant in the morning and there was fish that I didn't even order, but it met those standards and it was there. They just sent it because they knew we would be so excited to use it because it was caught in a way that we appreciated, and we appreciated more than the next restaurant. Not necessarily more than the next chef, because I know other chefs would have really appreciated it, but they knew what our philosophy was. Our location, we're on the water. We have a dock. We decided to start buying as much fish as possible from fishermen. And we basically started to befriend one fisherman, then another, saying, pull up. The answer is never no. I will never say no to a fisherman, just like I will never say no to a farmer. And I will never, ever, ever ask a fisherman for a quarter off, a dime off, a nickel off. That quarter, that dime to me means nothing. It truly does not change anything about that price, but it means everything to the fisherman. It means everything to a farmer. How dare us as chefs, as restaurant owners, try to nickel and dime these men and women that do this for a living to try to save ourselves a fraction of a percent? It's not worth it. This way, we build these relationships. They always come into our restaurants. They always deliver to us. They know they've built a market that the money's good. We're going to pay our bills. We're never going to say no. If you walk into my restaurant, I've got as many boat names as possible on the menu when I can certify that it came from that boat. Farmers, same thing. We've got to give these people the respect they're due.
And from a consumer point of view, even if you choose restaurants with that commitment that are perhaps less expensive than others because you're on a tight budget, honestly, if you have dinner, 50 cents on the total bill does not make much difference, right?
Not at all.
If you can't afford to have dinner once in a while in a restaurant, that 50 cents on your end plate price is really not making or breaking that dinner experience.
Talking
about, and you have your own boat.
I do, yes.
So you go out, what, every week?
I wish time allowed to be on the water more sure. because it's kind of my zen.
The heart of work.
It's my happy place.
Yes.
And right now with the restaurant and the nonprofit and the wholesale company, and there's a lot of demand on me, and I still want to be a great dad, and I still want to be a great husband, and it's demanding. So I try to fish once a week, once a month, whatever time allows. But at the same time, Helge, I also know that I've got an income stream that comes from something else. And if I'm going out, that means I might have too much fish, and I might say no to a fisherman or have the opportunity to have too much. I'd rather let the fisherman that needs to do that for a living go out there, catch us the fish, and I've got other things that can keep me busy.
And we want to talk about the wholesale and the nonprofit that that Fish has grown into or is now offering as well in a minute. But Mark, we were talking about fishing methods during the break, and fascinating.
I would like to know, so how are fish caught? I mean, you read all these stories and you get all these different things, but can you give us just some basic ways that fish are caught and what's good and maybe what's not so good for the oceans?
And they're only a handful, right? I believe.
There's not that much gear method out there. There is rod and reel, which you hear the term line caught. Now, line caught, we can get into. It's a little bit tricky when that definition. Rod and reel, like if the three of us went out fishing with three fishing poles, that is a viable commercial fishery. There's commercial fishermen that fish that way.
One or two hooks.
Exactly. Yeah. One fishing pole or six fishing poles on a boat in the state of California. We can fish six fishing poles on my boat as a single operator. There is net catching. There's some net catching that's good, and there's a lot of net catching that's extremely bad. And when we deal with net catching, we're going to look into what species we're catching. If we're catching anchovies, sardines, calamari, squid, we're using nets. Those are target-specific fisheries, and you locate the biomass of the fishery. You locate the biomass of the sardine, the biomass of the squid.
The swarm of the fish.
And you just catch those. And that's a sustainable fishery. You're fishing the top of the water column. You're not affecting the habitat down below.
So in other words, you're not ripping up reefs and there's very little to no bycatch.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. Then you have nets that are open ocean nets that are netting tuna by the ton load. Extremely bad. Dolphins, turtles, birds, other species that swim with the
sharks, whales.
Absolutely.
But just to step back a second. So there's these big nets that go through the ocean. But if they catch lots of tuna, well, I think that ends up in tuna. And if they catch some other things, doesn't that end up on somebody else's plate?
We hope so. But a lot of times boats cannot keep certain types of bycatch. It's a law what they can possess and what they can't possess and how much of something they possess. Going back to what we talked about a few minutes ago, Mark, it's very difficult to police them.
Right.
So when they've hit their limit of bycatch
with these big nets
and that fish is on board, they're out there tuna fishing, but they got a whole bunch of mahi-mahi on board, which is legal. But then they get into another school of tuna and another round of mahi-mahi. They can't come back into port with that mahi-mahi. So what's going to happen with that? It's going overboard and it's not going to end up on anyone's plate.
Mm-hmm.
And it died for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's draggers that drag the bottom of the ocean with two giant steel doors on either side of the net. That's what keeps the net down. And that hits the bottom, and then they start moving from point A to point B. They destroy the habitat. They take everything between point A and point B. And yes, we've gotten really far with our gear method. We are not doing as much damage as we were, say, 10 years ago, definitely 20 years ago. In my opinion, still way too much. Still way too much habitat damage. Still way too much unwanted bycatch. And the product is not good.
And what's the purpose of it? Why would they go to a method like that?
Volume. to because there's a need for volume. And we live in a supply and demand world. And as long as people are continuing to demand these fish, which they are, clearly they are, because we're continuing to go catch them with this gear, we're destroying ourselves in the process.
It's so fascinating to see the absolute parallel to industrial agriculture and mm-hmm. small scale artisan value added, organic or local and organic agriculture, where as soon as you attach a story to your product and the story is bad, then there's no market for you. If the story is good, you get that value added, of course, price for it. And it's the exact same in fishery. It's like,
do you think that's why the GMO, the people who support GMOs won't allow us to label it?
That's what I thought about.
You said if you tell the story, people will choose.
Yes, yes.
But if you don't tell the story, then you don't know, absolutely, and then ignorance absolutely. Is bliss. Right?
Labeling and education around this is then the key factor for people to make a decision. But it's just fascinating to me that it's the part that makes it anonymous that allows this, because quantity only is important when it's just about quantity. Right. As soon as you bring in quality, mm-hmm. as soon as you bring in the story, and the good story is part of the quality of the product, the cost to effect ratio goes completely out of whack. It just doesn't work. It literally doesn't work anymore. If you told the real story of how this fish was caught, it falls apart. The story falls apart.
Let's
finish that. And you said line caught could also mean, and I'm sure you'll go into long lining, right?
So there's pelagic long lining when we fish for pelagic species like tunas and swordfishes and sharks, and we run miles and miles of line. And sometimes on one line, there's 300 baited hooks. Something bites that hook. Just because you're fishing for tuna, it doesn't. The little bait that's out there swimming in the ocean doesn't say tuna. Yes. Something bites that hook. And a lot of these boats that set 25 and 50 miles of line.
So 25 and 50 miles of line with 300 hooks and how many lines on a boat? Maybe just a ballpark.
Usually one main line.
Okay, one line, yeah. 25 miles long, 300 hooks.
Baited hooks.
Okay.
Then by the time it takes to get the line out and to get the line in, a lot of the product is dead when it hits the deck, which affects the quality. It affects your ability to be selective.
Sure.
It's all on there. So now mm-hmm. what do we do with it? Okay, can we keep it legally? Okay, yes, we can. But what was the size of it? Was it a baby? You know, I've seen 50-pound swordfish, and it's the saddest thing in the world when you see a baby swordfish. I do serve swordfish on my menu once a year. I took my family, and we would go down to Southern California trying to meet a harpoon sword fisherman, and we finally met one. And when we filleted that fish open after he mailed it to us, it fell apart like sole. It was so delicate because the fish was shot, it was processed, and it didn't have a chance to tighten up on that line while it struggled to its death. So you definitely see a quality issue when you have unsustainably caught fish compared to sustainably caught fish, because we're taking care of it.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to an Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us in the studio, Kenny Beloff, the co-owner of Fish Restaurant, one of the leading sustainable restaurants in regard to seafood in the country, and also now offering educational services through an associated nonprofit as well as a wholesale business. Kenny, for the average or not so average listener, how can we differentiate in the store? Even if you're aware of all these catch methods, you are still standing at the, fish department at a grocery store, and you look at it and it might say line caught, but we know that could mean one or the other. What is the best guide for anyone to make a conscious decision?
So I would start is go to the bottom of the food chain. We need to reinvent what we're eating, because if we continue to target the top of the food chain, if we want the tunas and the halibuts and the salmons and the shrimp every time we go eat, we're going to be in trouble. Get creative. Start eating more sardines.
So when you say bottom, yeah. So
bottom of the food chain.
Sardines.
Start eating the bait, basically. Anchovies, sardines, squid. If you're on the East Coast, menhaden, herring here locally in the Bay Area is such a great choice. we have to start eating those fish that reproduce often, reproduce frequently, and have short lifespans. They can sustain us. Now, if we start to go up the food chain, we start to, you know, get a little bit dangerous. And if we go to the very top of the food chain, that's where we're going to do the most damage, because we're eliminating the top predators. We are eliminating fish that haven't reached reproductive age. We're eliminating fish that are breeders. And we're not giving those fisheries a chance. The fish, the orange roughy, which a lot of people are familiar with, which is a fairly new fishery. It didn't become a commercial fishery until the late 70s. We just learned in the last, say, 15 years that that fish lives to be between 100 and 150 years old and doesn't reach reproductive age until it's between 20 and 30 years old. But we caught 10-year-old, 15-year-old, 10-year-old fish, and we depleted the stocks. Mm-hmm. There's certain fish that we just need to say, you know what? It's off limits for this generation. It's off limits for the next generation.
And you're talking our generation, not the fish generation.
Absolutely, our generation. And then maybe a few generations down the road, we can enjoy that again. But we need to start acting now.
But so, what's a good guide, right? Mark, you were asking that.
Well, I was just wondering, is, you know, I go online, and I also have the Monterey Bay Aquarium Fish Guide. And so, you know, red, yellow, green. I've always felt that's pretty simple for me to use, and it certainly proves very handy when I'm in Urbana or I'm in, you know, Iowa City or someplace like that. And it's not typically where I'd choose to buy fish. But if you're out for dinner, you want an option, that's always proven to at least give me some sort of good guideline. What do you think about that?
I think Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch Guide is a great place to start. I think it's a quick reference guide. I think the best thing all of us can do, as I'm a user of it as well, is forget about the yellow list. Okay. Forget about it. Mm-hmm. Don't even look at it.
So yellow should be red.
If it's on the yellow list, there are some things on the yellow list that actually should be on the green if they come from the right boat. But that is a very complicated conversation. So just forget about it. Look at it as a red list item. Choose green options only, and then at least we're okay there.
So if it's yellow, you speed through it?
Yeah, don't wait until it's red or you get a ticket. On that note, we want to hear more about what you suggest, Kenny, but we got to take a quick break. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy. I almost said I'm Helge Hellberg.
You're speeding into, yes, the speeding Mark Mulcahy. We'll be right back after the break.
I'm old at sea, where no one can bother me, or guard my roots. If only for a day.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Hi, my name is Earl Herrick. I started Earl's Organic Produce over 20 years ago to bring the best certified organic produce to the San Francisco Bay Area. Still today, Earl's Organic Produce is sourcing only organic fruits and vegetables. Our core principle is healthy relationships with growers, the environment, and the clients we serve. If you are a business interested in offering the most delicious organic produce to your customers, please visit us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Marin Organic is an association of organic producers in Marin County, California, which has become one of the most progressive voices in the sustainable food movement in the United States. Through its many innovative initiatives, such as a school lunch and gleaning program, Marin Organic is creating a healthy, sustainable, and safe environment for all beings, today and for generations to come. Please become a partner in our work. by visiting marinorganic.org and by pledging your support now. Thank you.
And we're back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And our guest in the studio today, Kenny Beloff, the co-owner of Fish Restaurant, really leading the way in regard to sustainable seafood choices. Kenny, you were saying before the break, the Monterey Bay Aquarium Guide is really the way to go right now. If you want to have a kind of quick reference in your pocket with you, I think you can get it on the Monterey Bay Aquarium website showing green, yellow, and red your recommendation, because yellow sometimes throughout the year is okay, or the way it's caught. If it's not sustainably caught, might not be. It's very focused on the species, not necessarily only on the catching methods. So your recommendation, go with green. That's a good choice. But you also developed something more. You have a nonprofit now that really educates people around seafood choices.
We started FisherCutBait.org back in 2008, and the concept was we lost our salmon season, and we wanted an opportunity for chefs to take farm salmon off of their menu, and we developed this seasonal chart. And it goes back to eating seasonally. So what we tried to do is develop a chart that was based on a calendar system so chefs could get excited about what's getting ready to come into season, what's getting ready to go out of season, and we could plan our menus based on the calendar. And the cooks working within our restaurants could go, okay, we're a month away from local California halibut. What will I start thinking about? What am I going to do with that?
Menu-wise.
Absolutely, yeah. And get our creative juices going. And Great. It wasn't just a black and white, this is always good, this is always bad. We did a lot more in-depth research before making the choices that we picked.
Well, so it sounds to me like you're talking about what we've been talking about in the produce industry for a long time. And if you go to the Ferry Plaza building, you go to most co-ops around the country or natural food stores, you know, they tend to buy more seasonal products, or you bring in your local stuff more seasonally. So it really sounds like you're advocating for people who want to continue to eat fish or have that as part of their diet to really become seasonal fish eaters.
And what a concept, right? To think that the ocean has throughout the year seasons. I mean, here in the Bay Area, I know crab season.
Right.
And I now know through our work that, you know, salmon should not be available year round, 365 days of the year. But you're saying literally every species has a time, right?
Every species has a time, and we need to get excited for those times like we used to once upon a time. In the Northern California here, we used to get excited about salmon. We used to use it for holidays and birthdays and every festival. And then when the season stopped, that was okay. And we got excited about crab season. And then around springtime, we would get excited because salmon season was coming back. And then there would be a herring season in the middle.
Yeah, all
and
of a sudden, within like 4 days, there were millions of herring, right?
Absolutely.
Just came in one school.
And then California halibut. And down in Southern California, spiny lobsters, which is one of my favorites. We got excited. Then now with global trade and farmed salmon, it's whatever we want is available every day. And we just forgot about how we used to eat. And we really need to go back to that to, again, have a fighting chance.
And so if people followed your guide and ate seasonally on whatever's on the green list or the sustainable list, because your list is made up from some sustainable fish.
It is.
Are you saying that would not only give the fisheries a chance to potentially recover, but I think that what you're also saying, what I'm hearing you say, is that people would reconnect to the joy around the food, as opposed to anytime you have anything all the time, there's a certain specialness lost to it. And so this would help reconnect people to joy.
I'm feeling like that even goes further. We would reconnect to cycles, and we would acknowledge that our life is a cycle too, and one day we won't be here anymore. So all of a sudden, the value of life has to include the cycle of coming and passing. And so the more you're in touch with, peaches are in for 4 weeks, you're excited, you know they're gone, you're much more into the spring, summer, fall, winter. You know, you live in a time continuum then that is actually defined by what's going on in the natural world, mm-hmm. which is also what's going on in for our lives and in our physical bodies for this lifetime that we're here, rather than this kind of numbing 365-day salmon of the year. It's like, and then, you know, your life ends, but there's still 365-day salmon. It's just not true. It's really, it really, when you look at it, it's a fake world.
I make my living from the oceans in so many ways. And Mark, you said it so perfectly. It is our job to allow the oceans to recover from our demands and the pressures we put on it. And the only way we can do that is if we eat seasonally, allow that fish to recover with help from science, help from gear restrictions, help from the men and women that call themselves commercial fishermen, and then get excited about it the following year, and then let that happen again. Otherwise, we're just going to deplete every species.
Well, I read all these reports that saying first, you know, that have already said, well, you know, since we're already there with our fisheries, we've got to start farming fish, you know, tilapia and salmon and shrimp and all these different species. And yet, what most of what I've read has not been positive around fish farming. And so can you just enlighten us a little bit about farmed fish? I mean, is it all bad? Is it is there any good? Is it really as bad as they say? I mean, speaking of salmon all year round,
line cod, right? I think farming can be good and can be bad.
Absolutely. I mean, farming is a very touchy subject. It's one of those F words that we're we're constantly being asked questions about. If we look at farming shellfish, clams, mussels, oysters, great. It improves water quality. They're filter feeders. They don't depend on us having to feed them. The conversion ratio of fish in, fish out works because we plant the seed and the shellfish grows in our waterways. When we deal with finfish being a trout, a salmon, a halibut, and we deal with carnivorous finfish, that's where the equation starts to break apart and break down. When we're depleting the world's forage fish populations, forage fish, again, being those sardines, those anchovies, okay. those menhaden, and we're processing them down to a fish meal, then we're feeding this fish pellet to this farmed fish that's usually, in almost all cases, being done in open oceans. So you have escape of non-native species into waterways. You have algae blooms from the amount of waste that happens.
Because there's so much nitrogen in one area.
Falling through the net, yeah.
And then you have the feed ratio. And with all of these fish that I just mentioned, the salmon, the halibut, they're now farming cod, we are feeding them more than we get back.
So you mean like we're feeding you're taking a certain poundage of fish, actual fish, to create a certain poundage of fish?
A more desirable fish, because we want salmon on our menus, we don't want anchovies on our menus. Or so a lot of chefs will say.
So what's an example of that? I mean, what would be a ratio that you could just...
So bluefin tuna is... We're ranching bluefin tuna now. We're catching juvenile bluefins in the wild. We're putting them in a ranch, and we're fattening them up with sardines, and then we're selling them for so much money to the sushi market.
Okay.
25 pounds to one.
So 25 pounds of fish to create one pound of...
bluefin tuna.
The return on investment... Well, there'd be a big return on investment because the people are willing to pay the price, but... The cost to go into it does not equal out to the return.
The true cost of that is much greater than we even have any idea.
Mm-hmm.
With farmed salmon, there's salmon farms that will give you conversion ratios that claim to be sustainable salmon farms. They'll say, well, we're 3-1, 2.5-1 conversion ratio. They're giving you a dry conversion ratio. That's the actual pellets.
Yeah.
And we started this trout farm up in Susanville, California. And when working with David McFarland, who had the farm before we got involved, well, he was fascinated by my question when I asked him how much actual fish is in the fish in the pellets that you're feeding. He's like, I don't know. I go, so when you give me your conversion ratio, what does that mean? He goes, well, if I bought 2 pounds of pellets and I got 1 pound of trout, that's my conversion ratio. What did I pay for and what did I get?
Right.
Not the true conversion ratio, because we have to cook those forage fish down to make those pellets. And nobody wants to talk about that conversion ratio.
So you're saying for 2 pounds of pellet fish or fish protein in pellet form, you take 10 pounds or whatever it may be of sardines to boil down to 2 pounds of pellets.
It's anywhere between 6 and 8 tons of forage fish to make 1 ton of feed.
Oh, so I was just about right.
You were almost spot on. One thing that we need to do in aquaculture, and this is what we're doing, is algae. Algae is that brilliant, brilliant, amazing thing.
So let's talk about that, because salmon, farmed salmon, being from Germany, the Norwegian salmon was like a hit for the first years when it first came out way back in the 70s, I believe. And then every year we learned more about the colorings that they had to add because the salmon would be pale because they would no longer eat a fresh fish source or krill microbial life in the ocean and antibiotics because of overcrowding of nets. And so I think you can still buy Norwegian salmon in Germany, but it was so well educated that that's not a good source. And the moment I came to the U.S., it was kind of just introduced that some restaurants would feature Norwegian salmon as if it was like the desirable product.
Well, it sounds this is imported. This has got to be good.
And Norway sounds like clean and like, you know, Irish. I know there's a organic salmon that now comes out of Scotland, I believe. And we can talk about, you know, should salmon be farmed to begin with, since it's a migrating fish, one of the few that, or the only one maybe with eel that goes between salt and freshwater. But that said, you found a way of creating actually or helping to create or work with a sustainable farming trout operation.
We did. And
that's brand new, right?
We harvested our first fish last May of 2010. We're working on it prior to that, growing the fish out. Worked with Dr. Rick Barrows to help develop the feed, David McFarland up at the trout farm, Bill Foss and myself, and a lot of driving, a lot of passion, a lot of just, we're farming this trout, the conventional
trout.
Which
is delicious. I had it at your restaurant.
Thank you.
It's amazing fish, but the story is maybe even more amazing because
trout naturally is an insectivore, and we don't need to feed it other fish. We do to increase growth rates and get a return on our investment much faster because it grows much faster when we feed it fish meal. It can live off of anything. It's about the nutrients in the feed, not what the feed actually is. And algae was this thing that we needed. Algae is a tricky new technology right now because the supplement industry loves algae right now. It's got its essential fatty acids.
Blue
it's
green algae.
Yes. Yeah. So there's a price point. How much can you farm trout for compared to how much can you put algae in a vial and say, take two of these every day and you're going to be, you know, your brain power is going to be that much stronger. But we figured out how, and we are farming this fish. It is 100% vegetarian now. We're bringing it down every week. We make the drive up to the farm. It's a sight to see. All the water is from hydroelectric. We're getting a natural spring-fed pond. There is no waste. It is David is taken care of. He takes care of the fish. It's not overcrowded. There's no antibiotics. There's no medicines. It's as natural as you can get in a farming operation. Now, it's small scale. If we're lucky, when this is all worked out the kinks, maybe 100,000 pounds a year, so 2,000 pounds a week to this greater Bay Area, that's all there will ever be. What we need is a larger producer to go, yeah, we want to try this feed too, and start this spread. And it's not about it being ours and we did it. It's really about the change.
And lots of small operations like this, those are the opportunities to make this sustainable movement really an economical movement as well.
Spot on.
Yes, beautiful. All that you can enjoy at Fish in Sausalito, one of the leading sustainable fish restaurants in the nation, right on the waterfront. Kenny, where do you take this next? You have the nonprofit. What's the website for that?
FOCB.org, stands for FisherCutBait.org. Started a wholesale company, which is 2xC. We're the old one if by land, two if by sea. And
the website is two as a
TWOXSEA.com. And
anyone can work with you. Like if you have a restaurant that wants to buy your kind of sustainable fish sources, including the trout.
Absolutely.
They can go through 2xc2xc.com.
See, and all of my contact information, call me and we'll come in and we'll talk to you and let you know what we're up to.
So, you know, if you watch TV at all, which sounds like as busy as you are, you don't ever get time to do that. But when I'm in hotel rooms, sometimes I click on the TV for a little background noise as I'm traveling around the world. And there's always a commercial, no matter where I go, for this restaurant that is offering the crab and shrimp and steak plate for $5.99 now, or all these things. And for years I've wondered, and now that I have you in the room, I have to ask, is there any way, you know, because I've always thought, how can you offer crab and shrimp and whatever, just I'm looking at the seafood part of it, for $5.99 or $7.99 or $8.99, because I've eaten at your restaurants and, you know, a tuna sandwich is going to cost me $15 or something like that. And we know about the quality and the seasonality and what your mission statement is. So can someone go to some of these inexpensive restaurants that are constantly barraging you to come down there and eat dinner and actually in any way, shape, or form support what we're talking about here today?
Not really. Those restaurants have a very difficult time dealing with sustainable seafood at that price point.
Mm-hmm, I would think so.
Sustainable seafood, if we're really paying the fishermen what they should get paid mm-hmm. for using the correct gear, limiting their catch because of the correct gear. Because again, remember, if we're using small scale gear where it's more one fish at a time mm-hmm. rather than one ton at a time, mm-hmm. it costs more to get
that. Right.
And we're not depleting the ocean. So for the restaurants that you're mentioning, the you know, half a lobster tail and five shrimp and three scallops, not going to be a really good sustainable option there.
So it sounds to me that something we can leave, that I can walk away with this from is if I want to eat fish, if I want to participate in this as a food source for myself or my family, then what I need to do is think seasonally, and then also be willing to maybe eat fish less often to work with my budget, but therefore potentially enjoy it more, because not only am I creating a place where our children will see have fish, and also that the quality will be better.
But actually, in regard to budget, I'm finding that herring is not expensive, even if it's completely sustainable caught. So maybe we're just so used to the two versions of meat and two versions of fish that we would buy salmon for whatever it may be, $20 a pound or $15 a pound, when sardines are, what are you selling sardines
$5
for?
$5 a pound.
$5 a pound. And a pound of sardines stir-fried in your pan with some olive oil and salt, one of my favorite fish. Sardines, the small stuff that we eat it in Germany, in Greece, you get it fried at any stand in Greece. That's really the staple there. It's not the big fish. It's the little guy.
So it's just changing the whole thing.
I think we need to become a little bit more adventurous in this country for what we eat.
Okay.
And what our choices are. So continue to go to the seafood market. Continue to eat fish. I encourage it. I support it. I think it's a great thing.
Sure.
Get a little more adventurous. Mm-hmm. Demand results from where you buy your fish. Doesn't matter where you shop. Goes back to what I said in the beginning. Demand something from your fishmonger. Mm-hmm. They can get whatever it is that you're looking for, they can get it. Mm-hmm. But explain to them that they've got a customer for life if they can provide that for you, and they'll get it for you. They'll get you that pound of sardines, that pound of anchovies, that pound of squid, that pound of herring, and then you're eating something that's really good for you and also good for the oceans.
Fantastic.
Yes, truly sustainable seafood, the next frontier. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Kenny Beloff. Thanks for being part of this.
Okay, and Mark, to the thank studio. You so much. It was really great. Yes. I really appreciate it.
Important work and so much more fun. Co-owner of Fish Restaurant in Sausalito, Marin County, California.
An Organic Conversation is a production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer, Gina Rastani.
For our blogs, podcasts, and more information on this show and previous shows, please visit our website at anorganicconversation.com.
You can also follow us on iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter, and we love to hear from you. Please send us your comments and questions to share@anorganicconversation.com.
We really do. coming up next here, Beth Greer, You Supernatural Life, great show. Stay tuned. We are your hosts, Helge Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And we'll be back right here next week, same place, same time. See you then. And thanks again for being part of An Organic Conversation.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Then straight to her arms I'd go sailing. It's far beyond the star. It's near beyond the moon. I know beyond a doubt.